One Man's Family, winner of 47 national awards, a Carlton E. Morse creation. One Man's Family, now in its 27th year, is dedicated to the mothers and fathers of the younger generation and to their bewildering offspring. Chapter 2, Book 133 of the Barber Family Saga. Today, the gift from Mrs. Swan. In her second floor apartment in the Barber family home, Hazel Barber Murray is cautiously examining a Christmas gift sent to her husband Dan from a neighbor, the willowy widow Mrs. Queenie Swan, a former Folly star, still lovely at 50. Downstairs, the front door opens and closes. Hazel waits expectantly, then hears from the stairs.
Hello? Anybody here?
Oh, Joan, come on up. You're getting an early start.
Is Pinky asleep, Aunt Hazel?
He ought to be. He works all night, you know. I heard him come tiptoeing in about sunrise.
When he gets up, will you have him call me?
I'll put a note under his door. I have a date with Claudia. I hear Cousin Considers moved back to your house.
Yes. He arrived yesterday while Ross was there.
How was he?
Cousin Considers? Well, he was all right. Ross will build it into something, though. That's what I'm afraid of.
Too bad.
Cece says it's his birthday tomorrow. I didn't know that, did you?
Mm-mm.
Born on New Year's Eve, goodness only knows how many centuries ago. I guess yesterday he seemed to feel the years. He said he had to be with relatives and sleep in a familiar bed.
Yes, the mail is here. Letter for Hank from Greta. Letter for Pinky from Christian Matthewson. Literary agents, New York City.
What's that, Father? For Pinky, from whom?
Literary agents, New York.
Well.
Here we are, impressive looking envelope. Joan, good morning.
Hi, Grandfather.
Where is the night manager of Sears Savoy of Sausalito?
I'm sure he's asleep. Give me the letter and I'll put it under his door with a note from Joan.
Literary agents. What became of the novel that Pinky was writing?
He was stuck on page one, the last I heard.
Yes, well, I've got things to do. What are these? Oh, yes, Daniel's present from Mrs. Swan.
What?
A whole set of books, Joan, to Dan from Queenie Swan.
Yeah, the longevity theories on health and diet.
Did she think Uncle Dan needed them?
She thinks we all do. Dan and I dined with Mrs. Swan and her mother last night. She said Dan and I were each 7 pounds overweight.
Sounds like an amusing evening.
Dan seemed to enjoy it.
Well, I'll slip this letter under Pinky's door in case he wakes up before twilight. Literary agents. Be interesting to know what they're writing him about. Well, I'm going to the garden. See you later.
Bye, Grandfather.
Yes, I'll put Hank's letter from Greta on the hall table.
Don't let me keep you if you're going out.
Oh, wait. I'll write Pinky a note. Your mother and I are going to Penny's dress shop. We've been offered first choice of the better dresses when that is before they go on sale next week.
I know. I was surprised. I got an invitation, too. Well, I'll run along, Aunt Hazel.
Here's the note. Slip it under Pinky's door, if you
will. Okay. Is Uncle Paul upstairs?
I think he's still there. I heard his typewriter.
Well, I'd better not interrupt. There, under the door it goes. I'll be home all day if Pinky comes. Oh, Pinky, you startled me.
Hi-ho.
Did I wake you?
No. Couldn't get to sleep. Turned over, saw something white crawling under the door. Where do I get a robe?
I want to talk to you about Cousin Consider.
What'd he say?
He's getting a robe. Oh, Pinky?
Yeah?
It doesn't have to be now. It can be this afternoon.
That's okay. I don't seem to be sleeping. Hi, Mom.
Did you have breakfast this morning, or dinner, or whatever you have at that awful hour?
Oh, sure, I ate at the hotel. What about CZ, Joan?
Well, Ross was at the house yesterday when CZ moved back in.
Your house?
Yes. He felt old or something yesterday and needed friends. Well, the point is, Ross is threatening to take us back into court and change the custody arrangement, all because I'm planning to marry Ray Borden. He says the judge should know that we have an elderly inebriate living under the same roof with the kids.
What do you mean, elderly inebriate?
I'm quoting Ross.
CZ takes a little nip of brandy once in a while, that's all. Why shouldn't he? He must be darn near 90 years old.
Well, you know how Ross will present it on the witness stand.
Elderly inebriate. Someday I'll poke Ross right in the eye.
Cousin Consider told Zeppelin he would have moved into your hotel. Something about a penthouse with a tavern room adjoining. Well, I wondered if you could...
What's this letter? Christie and Matthewson. Oh, go ahead. What were you saying?
Well, he would have moved to the penthouse at the Savoy if you'd have asked him.
Yippee!
What is it?
Hey, is Uncle Paul here?
I think so, but what is it, Pinky?
Excuse me. Hey, Uncle Paul? Uncle Paul?
Yes, what is it, Pinky?
Big news! Hey, Mom, Joan, come on up. I didn't mean to run away. Come on up.
Well, for goodness sake, good news. That's a novelty for Pinky.
We'll return in just a moment to One Man's Family.
Not long ago, a United States Army major from New York State showed the forgotten people of Korea, 45,000 shunned and outcast lepers, that somebody still cared and remembered them. Major Frank Jaworski began by collecting nearly $30,000 in food, bedding, and clothing for the needy lepers and their children. He learned of the lepers' plight from Catholic missionaries in South Korea, and then began an amazing one-man campaign to help them. The major collected woolen jackets, sleeping bags, and any other equipment he could scrape up. Then, during the Christmas season, he asked the men of his unit, Headquarters Detachment 8th Army Special Troops, to contribute whatever they could for the afflicted children. The response was tremendous, showing the true American spirit of sharing and giving to those less fortunate. Before the men were finished giving, Major Jaworski found himself with 700 packages, each worth $5 of food and clothing for the lepers' children. With the windfall created by his men's generosity, the Major continued to give many of the packages to Korea's unregistered lepers, of whom there were an estimated 25,000 living in caves and under bridges. Yes, the Major had an axe to grind. He believed that in spite of race, color, creed, or disease, people are worth living for, working for, and sharing with. And he certainly accomplished a lion's share in upholding this belief. Through his unselfish act, he gave us all a thought to remember. We are Americans. As we go, so goes America.
In Paul's studio at the top of the house, Paul tilts back in his chair while he reads the letter with absorbed interest. Pinky stands beside him, hands in his hip pockets, teetering from heel to toe. He grins proudly as his mother and Joan come in.
Well, Pink.
How about that, Uncle Paul? Here, Mom, read it aloud. From Mr. Kenneth Christie. He used to be editor of magazines like Collier's and so forth. But now he's a top literary agent. Read what he says.
Mr. William M.H. Murray. William M.H.?
Yeah, it's sort of a pen name. You can't say William Martin Herbert Murray. That would be too much.
Mr. William M.H. Murray, 264 Seacliff Drive, Seacliff, San Francisco. Dear Mr. Murray, your sketch, Family Affair, strikes me as a hilarious job of literary spoofing. We will be pleased to offer it to the magazines. If you have any other likely material, we'll be glad to look it over. Sincerely yours, Kenneth Christie, Christie and Matheson.
Is that wonderful?
Does it mean you sold it?
Well, not yet, but at least he's got an agent.
A sketch? Well, why didn't I see it?
Oh, no, sir. Uncle Paul says it dilutes what you write if you show it around to friends and relatives.
Any competent editor can tell you if it's good or break it gently if it isn't. What your friends think doesn't matter.
I'd dearly love to read it.
Maybe you will someday, Mom. In print.
Good for you, Pink. When did you write this one?
Sky Ranch, last summer, while I was stuck on page one of the novel. It's sort of a short story, I guess. It's only about 12 pages long.
Hilarious job of literary spoofing. Why, Pinky!
Yeah, I guess it's funnier than I realized. It was a sketch about a big family on a summer vacation. Like us, you know? So I worked it over a couple times, and I sent it off to the...
Is Joan up there? Hello, who's upstairs?
Here I am.
Hey, Grandfather, come on up. Big news.
Yeah, telephone for Joan.
Oh, from Uncle Jack.
Zeppelin is calling. She's on the line. You can take it on the second floor. But be sure to have someone hang up in the library.
Oh, I will. Excuse me, everybody.
Yes.
Father, read this.
Yes. Pinky's up, I see.
Yep. Eyes wide open. Take a look at that, Grandfather.
How's the job, Pinky?
I was just thinking. From about 1 a.m. until the morning shift comes on, I got a lot of time to write, and that lobby, you know, gets as quiet as a tomb.
What does this mean exactly?
Well, it means he's written something that a first-rate agent has accepted.
A promise of money in his pocket?
No, Father. It means the agent is willing to try to sell something Pinky's written.
The agent is willing to try to sell it, I see.
Yes, sir. It's acceptance by a first-rate agent. Nearly every good writer has an agent. Now I've got one, too.
You've got something even better, Pinky. You've finally got a job. I would hate to have you jeopardize your new position by sitting at your desk in the lobby writing stories all night.
But last night there was nothing doing. I sat there reading a magazine.
Reading? Pinky, keep busy, earn your salary. You could have watered the potted plants, dusted the furniture, written a brochure. You've got a job, my boy. Next to a wife and home and family, nothing in the world is more precious than a job. Hang on to it. If you have to write, write on Saturday afternoons.
From the heights to the depths in 30 seconds. Goodbye, everybody. I'm going back to bed.
Pinky. barbers in just a moment.
This is Bill Goodwin. You know, someone once said humor's the true democracy. And that's why we Americans can smile when we tell the stories of the legendary heroes who helped to build our country's great institutions and industries. Like the hero of the advertising industry, Slappy Hooper. Slappy painted mighty realistic billboards, like the one for the Jim Dandy Hot Blast Stove and Range Company. The bright red flames he painted coming out of the stove looked so real, the grass around the sign started growing in the middle of January. And the bums drove nails into the billboards so they could hang cans next to the stove to heat water for soup and coffee. When Slappy changed the flames from red to white hot, it drove away the bums, but blistered the paint on cars parked near the sign. Slappy also did sky advertising, using sky hooks to hold up his scaffold. Now, he'd rent a 1,000-acre field and rope it off with barbed wire charged with electricity so nobody could watch him. After a while, though, he stopped sky painting because he was afraid the airplanes would cut the ropes of his scaffold. But every once in a while, he goes back to it. So, when you see an arch of color in the sky, it isn't really a rainbow. It's just some of Slappy's colors running together. Yes, it is a democracy which lets us tell the stories of such a legendary character as Slappy Hooper with a twinkle in our eyes and a chuckle in our throats. And so long as we continue to laugh together as a people, ladies and gentlemen, we will live together as a nation.
Trying to recapture a paragraph shattered by interruption, Paul sits at his typewriter, fingers on the keys. But then he senses a presence outside his door, hears the squeak of the third step from the top, waits, nothing happens, and so at last he rises and goes to the door.
Yes, Dad, what is it?
I thought if you hadn't started work again, Joan said when you're all through for the day, she'd like to see you. She seemed very frightened when she went home.
Well, what about?
That call was the message to telephone Jack at the office. I assume it was about the custody matter. Russ has seen his attorneys. Yeah, she could hardly trust herself to speak. She wants you to call her when you're through.
Well, I'll do better than that. I'll go over there now.
Yeah, I would be glad to help, but they don't confide in me. I never have known why.
One Man's Family, which comes to you Monday through Friday, is written by Harlan Ware and directed by Carlton E. Morse. This program has been selected to be heard by our armed forces overseas through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. In Chapter 3, Book 133, Bandages and a Happy New Year. Frank Barton speaking. One Man's Family, winner of 47 national awards, now in its 27th year, is a Carlton E. Morse production and comes to you from California.
One Man's Family has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.